Hey there, if you're listening to this and you support us on Patreon, you can hear it via the Patreon page ad-free.
So now, ladies and gentlemen, it is start time. Are you ready for start time?
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we're talking with electronic composer and Pulitzer Prize finalist Jay Lynn. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. But first, let's review new music from Beyoncé. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island since 1988. Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find 312 Wheat Ale, Big Juicy Beer Hug, and so many other limited releases at either of Goose's locations in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
This ain't Texas. Ain't no hold 'em. So lay your cards down, 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 down. So park your Lexus and throw your keys up. You come throw some sugar on me, honey, too. It's a real live boogie and a real live hold down. Don't be a come take it to the floor now. Woo!
That is a little bit of Texas Hold'em, one of the singles from the new Beyoncé record, Cowboy Carter. You probably haven't heard of Beyoncé or this new album. It's just not getting any.
Does she have a new
notice
record?
At all? It's incredible. But Jim and I felt we needed to review this record by this promising artist.
Oh, yes.
Eighth studio album from Beyoncé Knowles Carter, hence the name of the record. She's married to one Sean Carter, a.k.a. Jay-Z, hence the title Cowboy Carter. Let's talk a little bit about the genesis of this album. I think everybody knows who Beyoncé is, millions of records sold. She is probably one of the most famous artists and names alone in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
The genesis of Cowboy Carter. She performed a song called Daddy Lessons from her 2016 album Lemonade with the then Dixie Chicks at the 2016 Country Music Association Awards. It was taken as an affront by certain members of the country community that this black artist could be up on the stage performing this song at their award ceremony. Beyoncé took notice of that and said, we'll get back to that. She said Cowboy Carter was, quote, born out of an experience that I had years ago where I did not feel welcomed. And it was very clear that I wasn't. It's been teased, Jim, as Beyoncé's country album. But it's not really a country album. It's got some country elements to it. In fact, a number of country elements, but it's much broader than
that.
Well,
it's a Beyoncé record.
It is indeed. It is the second of a projected trilogy, the first being Renaissance in 2022, which took a sort of a wide-angle look at house and dance music. Cowboy is a follow-up to that record. It's taking a wide-angle look at country music.
You think she's
distinctly black perspective?
Well, it's true. You think she's going to go death metal on the last part of the trilogy?
Don't know. Yeah. Just a couple more notes on this record. Dolly Parton, Willie Nelson, and especially black country artists like the pioneering Linda Martell.
Mm-hmm.
Contemporary black country artists like Willie Jones, Shaboozey, and Rhiannon Giddens are on the record. First song, Texas Hold'em, that you just heard a little bit of us. First number one hit on a country chart by a black woman.
Unbelievable. After you know, a century of recorded music.
Indeed. 27 tracks, 79 minutes. We got a lot to unpack here. She co-produces and co-writes virtually everything except for the handful of covers. Here's the leadoff track on the record, American Requiem from Beyoncé on Sound Opinions.
Now is the time to face the wind.
That was a little bit of American Requiem from Beyoncé's sprawling new album, Cowboy Carter. You said we don't like to read reviews before we formulate our own opinions, but the Beyoncé press was inescapable. There's two ways to look at this album. One, it's as a political, cultural phenomenon, right? And two, it's what always matters most to us, the music. Despite the millions of words, literally millions, being spewed about Cowboy Carter, I have not read this sentence. The album's fun. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to it nonstop for a week, and I've been loving it. I mean, I wish there were actual duets with Dolly Parton and Willie Nelson instead of just like they phoned in little intros, you know. Mm-hmm. She dared rewrite Jolene from the point of view of a strong woman angry about this woman taking her man. She covered Blackbird. Oh, boy. Huge debates, right? A Paul McCartney White Album. Was it about the civil rights movement when he wrote it? Blackbird, flap your wings, learn to fly. Or was it just McCartney's, you know?
A ditty. Was it a ditty or was it a serious civil rights song?
Right. He doesn't explicate his songs. Yeah. But in Beyoncé's hands, it becomes one of several strong statements, I think, about the role of black women in American society today and also a century ago.
You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
You know, this is not new, black women in country music. What's new is it becoming a cultural, political phenomenon. It's not just country. I mean, that shredding rock guitar in Bodyguard, right? Mm-hmm. The little operatic flight in Daughter. Mm-hmm. There's a lot. You know, Spaghetti is sort of a hip-hop country-western jam, yeah. You know? And where's Lil Nas? Mm-hmm. I mean, she could have brought him in for a cameo too, okay? All right. I don't feel qualified talk about the political statement. So, Greg, I'm going to do something rare. Turn over my thoughts about this to two brilliant black female columnists. I have been reading them ever since both of these extraordinarily talented and insightful peers had very kind words to say about my R. Kelly book, okay? And now I read every word they write. Tressie McMillan Cottom wrote in the New York Times, "Rescribing pop music's history on black female Southern artists expands a vision of America's cultural politics." Right? People of color have a right to go everywhere they want. Beyonce wants to make a country album. Beyonce wants to make a death metal album. You know, have at it, Queen Bee. Even more insightful, Karen Atiyah at the Washington Post said, and she was more skeptical, "Reclaiming country as a black musical genre is certainly important, but selling a lot of records at the same time is the path of lowest risk. What is safer than a Beatles song written by a white man? Nevertheless, I've stopped looking to Beyoncé to use her art or her platform to give hope to people in times of struggle. Being a black woman doing whatever the hell she wants is itself a form of resistance." All right, I am not a black woman, but I think it was important to get those two perspectives. What was Karen Atiyah saying? Beyoncé wants to not be political. She wants to be a pop star, and yet, by virtue of the platform she has as arguably the world's most famous black woman, right? It is thrust upon her, and here she's jumping in the pool, right? With her use of the Martell comparisons and covering Blackbird. Nevertheless, did I say it before? Did I say it emphatically enough? It's a fun album!
Yeah. Well, it's easy to miss that part because there's so much, I think, so much gas was wasted on the whole idea of, is it a country album or not? And it goes back to what she experienced at the 2016 awards ceremony. Yeah. Like, the police were out, you know, the country police were out saying it's not. how can this be country? She's basically saying black music has been confined by genre since the beginning of time. The color of your skin excludes black people from participating in genres like rock music now and country music. And Beyoncé is saying she's reclaiming all those genres. And, you know, she doesn't want just a seat at the table. She's saying black music is the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything else flows from that.
And we, would not disagree.
All those genres with chairs around the table, they owe everything to black music.
Yeah.
So that's the wider statement that she's making here. And as you said, she's having a lot of fun. Let's put a little Italian opera into Daughter. Let's put a little let's put a little of everything into Yaya, Sly Stone, Nancy Sinatra, Beach Boys. It's all fair game.
New Orleans.
Let's do a little rap, you know, Beyonce rapping on Spaghetti, as you mentioned. If Lil Nas X can do it, I can do it, right? The covers all over the place, Beatles, Chuck Berry, Dolly Parton's Jolene. A lot of people are offended by her remaking the lyrics of the original intention of what Jolene was all about. Big deal. It's just, you know, she's having fun with that track.
Yeah.
She's putting her take on it, which is exactly what a cover should do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at first I was like, man, this album is so damn long.
It's
and there's so much here, and there's a lot. It could be better as one disc. But the more I listen, the more I realize I have a different favorite set of tracks every time I go through it.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you can cherry pick your favorite tracks, you know, at different times in your life or week or day.
Make two or
and
three
find
playlists.
Something about it that's kind of cool. I thought that was fantastic. I would say that no matter what your playlist is, though, you've got to include American Requiem, amazing, mm-hmm. amazing track, mm-hmm. amazing track. To lead off the record, psychedelic, and also just the way her voice is raging. You know, I said, do you hear me? You know?
Yeah.
I get it. Yes, I'm hearing you. Bodyguard, great pop song.
Yes.
Daughters, I mentioned the Italian opera, but that's her take on a spaghetti western, was what I figured out. Sergio Leone would have loved this, you know?
Italy, land of opera.
Ennio Morricone would have loved this, right? And then Amen, the last song on the record, I think really ties it all together in a very powerful way. This house was built with blood and bone. She's talking about black people, black music, you name it, and it crumbled. Yes, it's crumbled. The statues they made were beautiful, but they were lies of stone. I mean, she's slipping in these very powerful political statements within this really colorful all over the
map. Well,
map
and she's
record.
Clearly having fun and clearly feeling it, because for me, the problem up until Lemonade, which is where things changed, was Beyoncé was distant, too distant, mm-hmm. and not invested enough, too perfect almost at times. I think Lemonade, I think Renaissance, I think this album in particular, we're getting a sense of a human being who's really sharing, now, what she wants to share, not everything, but I feel like I know her better.
Right. It's an amazing record from one that I was not expecting to be amazed by, because I didn't think how she's gonna top some of those earlier records that she made the last 5 years. But I don't know if she's topped it, but this is certainly an engaging. What's part three of the trilogy gonna? Beyoncé does rock music.
Maybe.
You know, it was dance music, then it was country, and now it's going to be. I think she's going to take on all the genres.
I think she ought to go to Nashville and make a record with Jack White.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, go do indie rock music.
Mercy on me, baby. Have mercy on me. Mercy.
Well, that's what we thought of the new album by Beyoncé, although I think we could do another half hour on it, Craig. Now we want to hear from you. What do you make of this record? Leave us a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org. When we come back, we'll talk with the pioneering electronic composer, Jay Lynn. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in and inspired by Chicago. They got 312 Wheat Ale, Hazy Beer Hug, and many more one-off beers at the Fulton Street Tap Room or their new Salt Shed Pub. The perfect place to go before a show at the Salt Shed. Me and Andrew were there on opening night, Greg. Mm-hmm. It was really exciting. You had Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever, tick fever. I'm sorry about that. Anyway, every time we go to one of these goose joints, there's another new one to try, and we love them all.
I'm a fan. In addition to making great products and event spaces, Goose Island has always been a supporter of music culture in Chicago and nationwide. I mean, if you see that Goose Island logo at a venue or a restaurant, you know you're in good hands.
Yeah, we are proud to be associated with Goose Island. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer, and Sound Opinions is. Sound Opinions is brought to you by NordVPN. NordVPN is the gateway to secure and private access to the internet. We all need that. And it works by enveloping all of your online activities in a layer of encryption while also hiding information about your virtual location. Greg, before I had a VPN, I was sitting in a doctor's waiting room, and boy, did I get hammered with a virus. I mean, I go to the doctor and get rid of a virus.
Well, safety from viruses is one of the great uses of NordVPN. It's an incredible tool. It's easy to use. You can connect with just one click and enjoy the amazing speed on every major platform, from Windows to iOS to Android. Now, this summer, I'll be doing some traveling.
You're going overseas.
This is a necessity. You know, you've got to use this. I know I can count on NordVPN to help me easily access secure connections on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere I go. You know, it's easy to get hacked these days, right?
Yep.
This will help. It also makes it easy to access paid subscriptions to streaming services and content, even if it's not available in the country I'm in.
So you can watch your Netflix while you're sunning it in Europe.
Absolutely.
If you want safe access to your favorite streams, social media, and more, no matter where you are, get an exclusive NordVPN deal here at nordvpn.com/soundopinions. nordvpn.com/soundopinions. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and the link's in the description of this episode.
And we're back. Jay Lynn has been one of the most innovative producers and composers for me for more than a decade. The Gary, Indiana native has an incredible story of working long hours in a steel mill while they made their first songs at home on the audio editing program FL Studio. And then last year, they were a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize with their project Perspective.
3 Pulitzer Prize, and Jay Lynn still lives in Gary. But most of the time, life looks a lot different than their days working in the steel mill. You know, for instance, we reached Jay Lynn in the middle of an artist's residency with the new album that features Bjork, Philip Glass, and the Kronos Quartet, and about to play venues like Lincoln Center. We began our conversation talking about what was happening internally when Jay Lynn dropped out of college.
I didn't realize at that time I was running away from myself, but not realize I was actually running to myself at the time. So I was like, instead of going to class, I was teaching myself how to use FL Studio. And then it was just a tough time in my life. I started making music in like 2007. It was a tough period because I was going through a transition because I did not realize this was the beginning process of this, I guess, this segment of my journey where, you know, with music. So that's how it really got started. And then when I turned 25, I started working at U.S. Steel because I remember I was able to walk away before I turned 30. So, yeah, none of this, I would say, what is stability these days? There's no such way.
You are not incorrect, Jay Lynn. For the benefit of the listeners outside of the Chicago and Indiana area, Gary, hit hard, like the South Side or West Side of Chicago, by economic downturn, inequity. Between Chicago and Gary are the steel mills, including the one where you worked at.
Correct.
Hit hard by the economic downturn. It's a bleak and ugly part of the Midwest. And I say that as someone who grew up, mind you, you know, in Jersey City, New Jersey, which looks exactly like Gary.
Mm-hmm.
You're still still based in Gary. What do you get from that community?
It's a very big sense of family. To me, there is a beauty in Gary that I don't get anywhere else. For one, of course, it's the sense of home because that's where I was born and raised. But it's also, too, Gary is a very family-oriented space. What they lack on the outside, there's an inside beauty if you're from there that you know. So I think what keeps me there, of course, one, you know, like my family is there. You know, my parents are there. It's the total opposite of what I do. And I think I like that a lot. So like I'm like the first person to tell you, like, I can go from like an orchestra pit, and then you'll catch me at Harold's Chicken real easy.
Yeah.
Or you'll catch me. Yeah. Like I can go from playing at Lincoln Center and you could easily catch me at Aldi's shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because it's just a very, because this is not my career. This is what I do. It's not who I am. And composition is who I am. Creating is who I am. It's a perfect balance for me, because what most people would come through Gary and say, you know, it's a ugly place, or where is this? You know, you go down Broadway and you're like, hey, what's going on? But for me, I don't see it that way, because I know for what appears on the outside, I have learned to create from a space of nothingness. And what may look like nothing to someone else is everything to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You developed a relationship with R.P. Boo in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You were corresponding with him. R.P. Boo, one of the pioneers of footwork, which is an offshoot of house music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a lot of our listeners, you know, they might be familiar with house. Footwork is less widely known. And you became associated with that scene early on with some of your early work with the FL Studio that you had developed an acumen in, right? The digital audio workstation.
Mm-hmm.
Explain to our listeners what working with R.P. Boo was like and what footwork is. What drew you to that style of music?
Well, the first time I heard footwork, I was 4 years old, and it was just one of those times I never forgot. And then, like, fast forward, I'm like, I think I'm probably about this time on about 19 or 20 years old. And I had introduced myself to R.P. Boo. We became friends because I was very interested at that time. You know, I was teaching myself how to make footwork tracks at that time. Footwork is a Chicago based dance genre. It is music to dance to music. Can't have one without the other, even though I've seen it done with one without, and it doesn't make me feel good, but I like to see them both together. But it is very, it's 160, it's 155 to about 160 BPM bass. It's very four on the floor. You know, I love to see the dance along with the music. You get it as soon as you see it, but the dancers are like, they are just like, they're just something I've, you know, like something I've never seen, because I've never seen anything close to it. You know, back when I was like, Booth actually taught me how to DJ. I went to his house and we had one session and I got it after that. And once I did my first blend, it was just kind of it. And I just kept practicing and practicing. So when I first started out doing shows, like fast forward, when I was doing shows, I was DJing at first, but I don't like when people automatically assume when you make electronic music, they automatically assume you're a DJ. So like I often sometimes find myself correcting a person saying, no, I know how to DJ, but I am not a DJ. So, cause I play live.
You consider yourself a composer.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Let's go back to the chronology, Jalen. You're working at U.S. Steel. Mm-hmm. You start making music 2008 or so. Erotic Heat, 2011. Big breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first song most people know from you. Mm-hmm. How'd that come together? And what was special about it?
Because I was scared to put it out. And I was afraid because I was like, hey, at this time I was still really trying to be a footwork artist. And I was like, this doesn't sound like footwork, but it's something about this track I love. I said, I gotta put this out. And I did. And the response I got back to, I was not expecting the response I got back. I remember DJ Rashad, when he heard it, he was like, ooh, this is different. Mm. He said, this is something special. I remember him telling me, I love that you're not from Chicago. That is what's going to make your sound everything. He said, because I feel like, he said, after listening to this, it's going to morph you into someone different. He said, so, you know, just keep hitting it. And I'll never forget him saying that. And then it was just special. Like Mike Paradinas had heard it, who, you know, the label I'm with now, Planet Move Records. And I remember he was really excited about it. And, you know, it was nice. It was, I was scared, but my mom always told me, if you're afraid to do something, that's exactly what you should do. So she said, you know, she always tells me leap. So I did. And yep, the rest is history.
Well, you've been cited as one of the people that sort of took footwork out of that R.P. Boo, DJ Rashad, you know, roots and took it somewhere new. Mm-hmm. Were you consciously doing that, or did that just sort of, you know, like in a track like Eradicate?
No, I think that is exactly what Rashad was saying. He said the fact that I wasn't from Chicago was going to make that. That was what was going to make the difference. But the fact that he heard that so early. Rashad was such a genius mind, a brilliant in just the way he, not only the way he created and produced, but just like when you sit down and where, you know, when you talking to him, you know, when he was here, before he transitioned, he's such a wise man. But yeah, like I wasn't consciously doing it. My mom is the first person who actually heard that I was a composer though. Because truth be told, before I even started making footwork tracks, I used to make her, my mother's an author, and she made book trailers, and I used to score all of her book trailers. So she heard it beforehand, and they weren't, you know, like a footwork style. They were like cool. Like at that time, I didn't realize, you know, I could hear things in my head and how they should go. And so I started practicing. And just practicing and practicing and practicing. And then, yeah, that became a thing as well. So I was kind of, it started this versatility doing these two different, very different things.
It was incredible. And then you took another leap with the debut album in 2015, Dark Energy. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks, you know, because Eradicate ended up as one of the key tracks and also a track to move the music forward. But with Dark Energy in 2015, and especially with Black Origami in 2017, it really seemed like you were into new territory there. To the point where I think I've seen you say in a few interviews that you didn't feel like you could be classified as just footwork anymore.
No.
Footwork composer.
No, I couldn't. No, because I think I was still producing when I was footworking, but I knew I was really going in another direction when I started creating Black Origami. And I was starting to accept the fact that, okay, maybe I am a composer because I really do sit here and take the time to arrange this stuff out. I hear in layers. And I think at the time when I was making footwork tracks, I was getting to where I am now, but it was quite the journey to get to the space that I'm at now and to where I'm at right now. But I feel like, yeah, when Black Origami came along, it was like, okay. we have a foundation, we have a structure. But then when autobiography came along, then it was like, oh no, these, okay, now you just outright, this is outright like composition. I love choreography. I love movement, period. But when I was working with Wayne, you have to, when you're working with like in dance company, oh, you have to be able to hear things differently and not just one way, because it has to, you know, you don't want to go against the, it's okay to go against a thing, but like to go against tradition, but you don't want to lose the fluidity of the thing, if that makes sense. So I think working with Wayne really just brought that out, and then later working with Kyle Abraham, and yeah, it makes a lot of practice. I have a saying I said, if your gift doesn't humble you daily, then you're not practicing enough, because God knows I get humbled on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour basis.
You know, you're talking about the British choreographer Wayne McGregor, whom you worked with in 2018, and yes. Kyle Abraham, another choreographer with the Motion Dance Club in 2021. You're in the territory where, like, people like Philip Glass, they're making these compositions that modern dance companies are using to underscore the dancing, and you're in that same category.
Look at the guest contributors on this new album, Acoma, which is where we're getting, Jalen. You've only got three: Bjork, Kronos Quartet, and Philip Glass. Man, what does your iPhone phone book look like, man?
Coming up, how Jalen got each of those collaborators to work on their new album. That's in a minute on Sound Opinion.
Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
And we're back. We're talking with electronic composer Jay Lynn about working with Philip Glass, Bjork, and the Kronos Quartet on their new album, A Coma.
Must thank all three of them because they were all so willing. I didn't catch a resistance from no one. Everybody was like, when I asked, you know, would they be on this record? And they were like, yes. Like, everybody was, like, so excited to do it. So, which was wild.
Yeah, I'll say.
Yeah, so it was just like, first of all, like, if I can just go through, you know, each of them, I said, so it'll start with Bjork. I actually had remixed for Bjork before. And mm-hmm. I remember when I had done Sonar Reykjavik, and I think it might have been 18 or 19. I want to say 18. And I remember when I got to Iceland, I got to my hotel, and literally, like, Bjork picked me up at the hotel and gave me a full tour of Reykjavik. So in her truck, wow. Which was very sweet. And then we just hung out afterwards. Like, we just hung out. We didn't really talk about music. We were just talking about life. And we hung out at a cafe and we were just talking. And so this was after I had done the remix. So then fast forward on her last album, I was supposed to produce a record on there. But sometimes, you know, things just don't line up the way they're supposed to. But from what she had sent me, you know, the elements and kind of like what she had sent me in the like stems to work with, I had started it, but I couldn't find the time. And I ended up, I apologized to her. And, but when I did get some time, I started writing. At this point, I didn't know if I was writing an album or if I was just writing, but I started writing from what she had sent me. And, I created, you know, it had no name at the time, but Borealis now. And I remember when I did know I was going to, okay, I have a record now, and I had other tracks made as well. I went and I asked her, I said, I owe you. I was like, because I was supposed to be on your record. And I said, I owe you. And so she was like, I asked her, I said, could I put this on, you know, this track? Like, I had sent her the Borealis, and she loved it. And so I asked, I said, well, can I put it on my record? She was like, yeah, go ahead. And so, which was really sweet. And so, yeah, so then, yeah, so now here it is on the Coma. Yeah, so, and then Philip, I was, like I said, I was at the beginning process and really didn't know what A Coma was going to be or what it was. And both Philip and I worked with Pomegranate Art. And Pomegranate commissioned me to commissioned the entire album, A Coma. And I remember when they asked me, Linda Brumback and Elisa Regas, who are the heads of Pomegranate, and they both had asked me, well, what do you want this album to be? And I was like, I didn't know at the time, but I knew, I was like, I just knew I, you know, like, I would love to have Philip on this record. And so I said, well, I would love for Philip to be on the record. They were like, okay, well, you know, what would you want him to do? So after that, okay, I was like, oh, okay, maybe this is about to be a thing. I didn't know. So I was like, well, I know, you know, Philip has a practice of getting up at 5 a.m. and hitting the piano and, you know, just like practicing. And so I said, whatever he does in the morning at that time, I just record it and send it to me and I'll play around him, whatever he does. And so that's how it happened. And so when I sent the first demo in to my team, I hated it. And I threw that whole thing out. And then I had the second demo, which was the start of how Precision of Infinity. And then my team loved it. I loved it. I was feeling good about it. So I went and I finished it, sent it back to my team. They loved it. Sent it to Phillip and his team. He loved it. They loved it. So it was like, okay, this is a go. Yeah. And then Chronos, I've written Chronos before for their 50 of the future, back in 2000 and, whoo, God, I want to say 18, 19, maybe. Yeah. So I wrote Little Black Book for them and for their 50 for the future. And, we had done, again, Pomegranate had curated a show for the celebration of Philip Glass's 85th birthday with pieces by him reimagined by Chronos and myself. And so I remember I did a reimagined piece of Chronos' arrangement of Philip's piece, Quartet Thought. And like Chronos, they loved it. And so on show day, I remember asking David after we had done the show for Philip, and I had met Philip that day for the first time, which I cried, of course. And then I remember asking David Harrington, I was like, can I use this? He's like, yeah, that'd be great. So David, yes, okay, they were on board. Yeah. So just like, yeah, everybody was like, it's a go. But I think the most fulfilling was like Philip's piece, because we had done an artist residency together. He was doing, you know, his thing, and we were just at the residency at the same time, but we were doing two different things. But I got to come down, and he came down to where Florence Toe, who was my she's basically my visionist. I can't even call her audio visual. She's a complete visionist for Acoma, and just throughout the years of us working together, Philip came down and came to our rehearsal, and I got to play him the Precision of Infinity with him sitting there, and he was just like, it blew him away. He's like, play it again. So that was a very that's a very high compliment.
Jalen, I think a lot of our listeners who aren't familiar with the world of electronic composition, electronic musicians, are wondering what you do. So we can see Philip Glass at 5 a.m. coming down in his jammies and playing the piano, right? Mm-hmm. But when you said you were crafting, you were adding to this track, you're essentially jamming with him. You know, what are you using? Is it just your laptop? Are you playing on a keyboard fed into your recording system? I'm like, you know, for the most basic, like how do you do what you do?
Oh, okay. So I still use FL to this day.
And that's a computer program.
That's my DAW. And then I use, and I have an MPC.
But what? How are you using it? Are you just using the computer keyboard?
No. I have a MPC, my drum machine.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, and then right, I have right. And then I have an interface. I have a pair of 8020 Genelec monitors that I plug through my interface, and then I just go through. I have many libraries of sound. So when I created like the piece for, you know, for Philip, and just like how I create for anything, whether it be myself or anybody, yeah, I go through my DAW and I just kind of I tinker around because I don't, everything is very blank canvas for me, which is why I actually wrote the track Open Canvas, because I never know what I'm going to do ever. So it is much as a surprise to me as it is to anybody else for the end result. I go through my sound library and my NFL or go through many of things until I stumble upon that thing that strikes me.
Mm-hmm.
If you could imagine, like I'm just looking at like a blank wall and then I have to first pick a color. and that is the hardest part, picking the first color.
I had a friend of mine who was really into your music, and he was he's a drummer by trade.
Mm.
And I was asking him, you know, this is very polyrhythmic. It reminds me a lot of African music from like the 70s, Fela Kuti or something, these big bands where there was multiple percussion instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, yeah, she's creating 6-8, 12-4, 12-8, 3 against 4, and they're all kind of like layered on top of each other. He goes, so this is like a really amazing electronic production. He very highly enamored with what you were doing. And then lately you've been working with these instrumentalists. I know that you went to India and Uganda, I think, and got some, observed some of what was going on there and incorporated that into your music. But you're also working with these live ensembles,
mm-hmm.
right? And sort of in the Third Coast Percussion Ensemble, for example, for which you got the Pulitzer Prize nomination.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a Chicago-based percussion quartet.
Right.
Basically, what we were doing there, Jaylin, was what, sampling them and then incorporating that into what you were doing on the computer?
Yeah, like, so basically, I would go and, yeah, I went to their studio for, like, and me and Sean Connors, we were in there for, like, 8 to 12 hours, I think. Yeah, like, nah, I think, I know. We were there, and they have such a massive library, like, I have to say this. I love Spitfire, but Spitfire Audio needs to get with Third Coast Percussion immediately and create a library. I highly advise. I just need to say that. But because they have such a massive library and these four brilliant guys. And yeah, so I just went through and with Sean, and I recorded as much as I could, and then I went back and just, you know, incorporated with what I do. And then also just using, at points, just using just their, from what I recorded with just their instruments and then doing the same. Cause I can't read music. And I didn't go to school for music, but I can hear and I can arrange, I think, pretty good.
mm-hmm. I'd say.
Yeah.
Not a lot of women or people of color in either of the two worlds mm-hmm. you straddle, Jaylin. Electronic dance music or the minimalist avant-garde classical world. Has that ever been a challenge to you, or are you just like, I'm doing what I'm doing?
Mm-hmm.
Welcome.
No, it's not a challenge to me in that regard, because one, all music, any music being the highest form of vibration, love as well. I equivalate those. Music and love very much one and the same, or operating with, I would say, on their frequency. I've never separated genres. So I don't look at things like, oh, this is that genre or this genre, this genre, because music to me is music, and it's all very much one and the same. Just like I very much am aware of, you know, like I love that, you know, I see trap and classical music is very much one and the same. yeah. I mean, I know it's funny, but I very much do. But also, too, just like you brought up the word minimalist. And oftentimes I've never, like when people talk about Philip, you know, they call him a minimalist a lot, and I don't see it that way. Philip is a maximist, not a minimalist. You can't create that kind of sound and use the word minimal.
He's
a maximist. So I just felt like I needed to say that. But I feel
no, I understand. It doesn't always need an orchestra.
It's wild. I feel like, yeah, like trap and classical are very much one and the same. I can hear both in each sound all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're like, you know what I'm saying? It's more family than they are separate. I think that I understand the genre for reference points, but I think people have separated and then created subgenres on top of this already very separate, I would say, separation that has happened. But for me, music is music. They're all very much one and the same, which is why I can go from this space to that space and I don't feel a shift.
You're totally independent, it seems like, in terms of what you want to do. You don't have to answer to a big record company or a big manager or anything. Is that correct? I mean, do you want to continue going in that route?
Correct. Yeah, definitely. Because I to be harnessed is painful. Yeah, it's painful. I cannot even imagine. Like, I have been so graced and blessed that when everybody who has ever worked with me has just trusted me to be me. Every person I've ever worked with, nobody has ever come in with, like, you know, they'll give me the direction of a theme or something like that or the concept, but it's never, you know, strictly, this is what I want you to do. Everybody always ends that final thing is, I just want you to do you. And that's a hell of a lot of trust. That's a very high compliment. That's a very high compliment.
Yeah. Jalen, we play this game, you know, the Desert Island Jukebox, a track you can't live without. What would you choose to be stranded with? At this day and time, you know, not to define you forever, but...
All right. So my first Desert Island would be Sade's Love Is Rock.
You think I'd leave your side, baby? Better than that. Think I'd leave you down when you're down on your knees. I wouldn't do that.
I've read where you grew up, a big shot.
Yeah, that's my favorite artist. I would have to say Earth, Wind, and Fire, All in All, that album. Mm. And then I would have to choose, my God, that's so rough. I would pick Autobiography, my record.
And you deserve that.
Oh, yeah.
Why?
You.
What about?
It was a paradigm shift when that was happening. And I was actually working on Black Origami and writing Autobiography at the same time. Mm. Yeah. So I think it was a really big shift when that happened. So I have to pick that one because I remember that was like the first big shift. So,
you know, artists are always most excited about the new album, but it's interesting that that one holds up for you.
Yeah.
That you can still take pride.
Yeah, that one holds up for me because that one is, that's the part that most people don't see when you personally go through a paradigm shift. They just get the end result of you going through the shift.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it brings you back to what you were going through, where you were. Yeah. Is this going to be a super busy year, touring behind Tacoma?
Oh, God. I've done an interview every day this week. And on top of doing an artist residency, this is, and today is performance day. You tell me.
Wow. Well, we'll let you get back to work. It's been a complete pleasure talking to Jalen from neighboring Gary, Indiana. Fantastic new album, Tacoma. Thank you for coming on Sound Opinions.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
That wraps up our conversation with Jalen. And as always, we want to hear from you. Leave us a message on our website, soundopinions.org. Share your thoughts. Mr. Cott, what is on the show next week?
Next week, the Black Keys, they've been around for 20-plus years. They've got a great new album. We talked to both
Keys.
The Keys. Yes, we did. And don't forget to check out our bonus podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors. Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. Our Columbia College intern is Max Hatlam, and our social media consultant is Katie Cott.